Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Steve App, Chief Financial Officer of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And joining us in our conversation is Dennis Kayser. Well, Steve, in the previous segment, you talked about the FDIC's three program areas. In this segment, we'd like to talk about how the FDIC works towards the goals set forth in the President's management agenda. Let's start with HR. Could you describe the human resources challenges that you face as the CFO?
Yeah, I think like most government agencies, we've looked at the National Commission on Public Service, the Volcker Commission. We've heard Dave Walker, General Accounting Office, talk about some of the looming threats in the HR area. And we pretty much agree with that. Our world is getting more complex and changing with technology. We need to have more rapidly changing skill sets. It's not a static environment anymore. Our workforce is also aging, so some of that expertise will be walking out the door in the next 5 to 10 years. We feel that somewhere between 35% to 40% of our folks, some of our most experienced folks, may actually exit in the next 5 to 10 years. So there's the need to, I think, take a hard look at the civil service system that was really designed for a sort of a stable kind of world, and to see where some of those outdated things could be changed. Unlike some organizations in the government, we do have some flexibilities that get us a little closer to dealing with some of those dynamic needs, but not completely. We have experimented and have a pretty good program for pay for performance, if you will. We've gone to pay banding for the executives and managers. We put pay at risk, so there's no automatic cost of living increases. Everything is kind of tied to how well we perform and get results. We've done some new classifications to separate the executives from managers, and we've actually cascaded that down to sort of the rank and file. We're also investing a lot in training. We've created a corporate university similar to GE Crotonsville, and that's been launched recently, and the notion is to really provide a lot of the specialized training that we're seeing a need for in the banking area. We're also looking at what some of the other agencies have been granted recently. GAO, NASA, Department of Defense, Homeland Security, some of the flexibilities they've gotten, a greater ability to hire, flexibility in hiring, restructuring your workforce, taking care of poor job performance, and even acquiring temporary folks. So we're considering a legislative package on that that kind of mirrors some of the other things that folks have been granted, basically to try to stay ahead of this curve so that we can get some of these flexibilities in place before a lot of our expertise walks out the door, and that over time we can add folks much quicker as needed in specialty areas, be it securitization, derivatives, things like that, that emerge fairly quickly.
Steve, if we move to strategic planning, how do you as the CFO facilitate the process of integrating the planning and budgeting processes?
We have a process that's almost completely integrated at this point. We've streamlined that process to about 90 days, so we start in mid to late July, and there's a very immediate connection with our process. So unlike appropriated agencies, we begin to develop our strategic plans and corporate goals in the July-August timeframe, and we craft that into a budget, and we take it to the board in December of that year, and it's immediately effective in January. What we do is we convene the entire senior management team, the chief operating officer and myself, with all the division directors, and we go over the goals for the prior year, and then we see how we want to modify those goals. And the real theme to keep in mind here is that these plans and goals really drive our budget. There's a very direct connection between what we want to accomplish and how we budget. We look at workload projections. That's a part of it, along with the goals. And we sort of reaffirm last year's goals or we modify those goals. And then that sort of gets funneled down into a budget. We try to stay with the concept of vital few. So we don't have 100 corporate goals. We have about 15 to 20, 16, I think, for this year. And then as we go through that process and we vet it with the chairman and other members of the board, it culminates in a budget approval process again in December, but there's a very immediate connection, and I want to underscore that because having come from the appropriated world, a lot of times the folks that are working on a budget aren't there when that budget actually gets enacted. It's a two-year, hence, process. So I think you get the sense that the leadership of the corporation, from the chairman on down, really have an immediate connection where we set things as the plans drive the budget, and that immediately becomes effective.
So as part of that process, how are you linking resource allocations to performance?
We don't exactly link resource allocation to performance at this point. Instead, what we do, the chief operating officer and myself, we have a very structured quarterly performance review process where we go down all of those vital few 16 goals, and we look at those areas in a very affirmative way to see who is performing, who is on target, who is not on target. We make adjustments if the target was incorrect or if some additional emphasis needs to be put on a place, we sort of do that, but we don't necessarily readjust the allocations like you would have. Another important thing to mention is that as you look at the President's Management Agenda of Integrating Performance and Budget, I think the other connection has to be not just that the plans drive the budget, but that how you accomplish the results drives compensation. So as we go through that quarterly performance review, at the end of the year, we sort of do an annual review. And then that pay for performance is really how the executives are compensated. Again, all increases for executives are at risk. So we deliberate with the chairman on what kind of year we had against these objectives, and then that sort of drives how we do it. And again, we've cascaded that to some effect down to the rank and file. A big part of what we're trying to improve, because this is kind of a work in progress, is to, as we upgrade our financial systems, we're putting in a robust state-of-the-art cost accounting activity system. So we're going to look at maybe 50 to 60 different cost buckets that are really very meaningful to how we manage the corporation. And those things, in many cases, can be crosswalked into some of these goals as well. So you have both performance and cost information on a particular goal or activity. And I think that will enhance it and may lead us down the road to maybe be able to allocate some of these resources throughout the year into different buckets.
Earlier mentioned that you were the co-chair of the Capital Investment Review Committee. What are the responsibilities of that committee, and how does it improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the corporation?
The Capital Investment Review Committee, or the CIRC as we call it, is just a wonderful tool. And I think in the rest of the government agencies, it's sort of envious that we have this. There's been a lot of talk in the regular government how the lack of a capital budget creates lots of perverted outcomes, especially in the systems area. And we've crafted this in a way to try to mitigate some of those risks. So in essence, what we're trying to do is make sure that every investment dollar is used intelligently. So the process really has become a very standardized way to look at our big ticket items, sort of the 80-20 rule, those 20 projects or 20% of the projects that result in about 80% of the IT dollars, and to superimpose a standardized process on it. Standardize in terms of which projects we select, standardize in terms of how we monitor those projects over the life cycle, and standardize in terms of how we look at the business case. Did we actually achieve what we said we were going to do, which a lot of systems never get to that point after the fact. The way the process works is as an idea for a project comes along, it goes through two filters before it gets to us. We have a very rigorous financial analysis group that looked at the return on investment, the cost factors, is it a least cost option or a big return on investment option, and standardizes that in a certain way. The other filter is the enterprise architecture group to make sure it fits in with the whole data architecture. If it passes muster with those two groups, it comes to the CIRC. I co-chair it with the CIO, but all seven division directors sit on that, so you can see the integration of these projects. If we approve it, it goes to the board. If the board approve it, it gets full life cycle funding. Not annual funding, full life cycle funding. The trade-off is that we have to report to the board every quarter on how that project is doing. Three categories, budget, project plan and milestones, and is it still achieving the business case? What's happening is we're getting a much more integrated look at this portfolio, where the portfolio intersects, and also I'm very proud of the fact that everybody's being very honest about sharing the lessons learned on some of these projects. Everything hasn't been all roses. Some of the projects have had little hiccups. We made some adjustments. We've re-baselined some things, but we're learning and doing a much better job of improving the management of these projects. So I think over time, it'll actually get to the results stage where we'll hit the return on investment for most of these projects.
A lot of our conversation has been about efficiency and effectiveness. I'm curious, is the FDIC looking at competitive sourcing as a way to accomplish those goals?
Since we're independent, we don't really follow the FAIR Act, and so we're not looking for certain targets or goals. But in general, we look for best value. And we're always trying to find that in our competitive areas. So in our commercial space and in the non-inherently governmental, probably the biggest area we look at is in the IT function. So we're taking an aggressive look at always trying to get better competition on those contracts. We also look at some specialized areas where we need maybe special legal counsel on certain areas or for asset sales. Things where the marketplace does that on a regular basis more efficiently. So we're always looking at those values. And we've done a lot of it. We're just not quite subject to all the other government agencies' goals on that.
Well, that's interesting. As we look to the future, what are the top threats to the nation's financial systems? We'll ask Steve App, CFO of the FDIC, for his thoughts when the Business of Government Hour continues.